Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Kemp, Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to
executives in the league is
not talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention Deans anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
I've tampered with the guys.
I didn't tamper.
I'm
just telling you what happened.
Here's your host, Sam Amick.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic, here with the usual suspect. We have had some ins and outs when it comes to all of our attendance in recent weeks, but man, when you got free agency coming, gentlemen, we got to have the whole squad here. We got Anthony Slater, we got Fred Katz, we got tampering in full effect, we got free agency guys on Friday. What do we got? 6 p.m. Pacific is our tip off.
I think it's 3 p.m. I think it's 6 Eastern.
Eastern. I'm backwards. Okay, there we go. You got to start in the East, of course. That East Coast bias. Free agency is here.
Yes. You mentioned tampering, though. This is like the tampering Super Bowl week, right?
There's definitely tampering happening right now. We should find out where that is and spotlight it, highlight it.
Like 25 spots across the league.
Yes, I know. Before we dive in, you and I even texted the other day about a particular situation where it was like, it's tough to cover this stuff because the reality is everybody talks early. But if everything gets reported, then it gets pretty messy. So, you know, them's are the breaks, I guess. Guys, free agency is just obviously always an incredibly interesting, compelling, fascinating time of year. This one comes with all kinds of action heading in. We got the Bradley Beal trade that had a ripple effect with Slater's team, with the Warriors getting Chris Paul eventually once he departed the Wizards. You know, and we got another non-free agency but relevant high-profile situation that I wrote about coming into this week, which is Damian Lillard in Portland. This week, though, on the pod, we're going to make the rounds. We're going to try to chronicle and kind of landscape it, if you will, to see where this whole week is going. I'm going to start, though, with the news of the day real quick, and I want you guys to weigh in because it's a pretty interesting situation. I mentioned Dame. I know the fans, certainly Blazers fans, they're tired of the storyline. Is Damian Lillard happy? Is he going to stay in Portland? You know, I wrote this thing coming into Monday, and a lot of the comments reflected that sentiment. And I get it, but it does feel, I know it sounds like the kind of the media boy who cried wolf, like it might be coming to a head, depending on what happens in the next 4, 5, 6, 7 days. And I would break it down like this. The Blazers choose on draft night, obviously, to not move their number three pick. Damian had actually been somewhat transparent publicly about his desire for them to move the pick for a high-level veteran. He wants an older, more talented title-contending team, which just that pathway does not seem possible right now. They keep the pick. They go with Scoot Henderson, Chris Murray at number 23, even in the second round. And apologies, I'm forgetting the young man's name, but at 43, getting a guy that was good enough that he was in the green room. They actually had him in the lottery on, and he's, you know, I'm going to give him respect in a moment here and put his name on it.
I love how every team gets a later pick and is like, always like, man, we had him 27 spots ahead of this.
Right, right. That is very true. When I heard that, even as I repeated this little nugget, Slater, I literally thought to myself, like, am I going to breathe life into that? Like, do I believe it? Like, you know, picks or it didn't happen type of thing. But that is the claim that their number 43 pick was on their board in the lottery.
And so, all three are going to be huge in the West Finals next year.
That's right,
for the
baby.
The Blazers.
That's right.
Ryan Rupert, according to Andrew Schlecht.
Thank you. Y'all picking me up there. Thank you, Schlecht. So they have a pretty strong draft. They're feeling great, but it's not what Damian necessarily had in mind. And I don't want to belabor this. What's that?
Rupert. I mean, you know, Rupert. He's correcting my pronunciation. There you go.
Come on.
They had a strong draft, Sam. I mean, doesn't it seem like the perfect draft to jumpstart a rebuild?
It does. It does. And that's how we'll cut to the chase. Like, they meet Dame and GM Joe Cronin, and Damian's agent Aaron Goodwin met on Monday. And I do. I just think that the tweak to the timeline here that I tried to write in the story is that this was not an all or nothing thing on draft night. It does feel like it might be an all or nothing thing, you know, 3, 4, 5 days into free agency. If they aren't taking, you know, or forget taking big swings, if they aren't landing big swings, knocking it out of the park, then the fireworks might eventually finally come. How do you guys see it?
I think they should rebuild. I thought they should rebuild for a few years. I mean, I'll continue to say it. Like, Scoot Henderson, Shaedon Sharpe, Anfernee Simons, these young draft picks you mentioned, and then whatever you can get from a Damian Lillard trade, which, by the way, would be a lot more than a Bradley Beal trade, or, like, you know, John Collins gets salary dumped yesterday. Like, you can get some stuff for Damian Lillard. So, to me, like, I don't – Portland, in my opinion, shouldn't even asking Slater? Damian Lillard if he Real wants quick. To or he doesn't want to go. Like, just trade him like that. But
it ain't going down like that, though. I'm telling – that's I the get thing.
It. I They're get it, but you're asking me what I think.
I know, that's but I let's think. Let's go into what might actually happen. And okay. Fred, you know, considering, you know, how closely you've covered the Bradley Beal chronicle.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And you've seen the no trade clause and the impact that it had in that situation. Do you buy or not buy the assertion that Dame's contract, which tops out at, I think, $63 million, like 27 years from now, is the equivalent of a no trade clause because they are not going to place him somewhere he doesn't want. No team wants that contract if that player doesn't want to be there. And that's why there's a little noise about other teams, but like I wrote, you know, it feels like a Miami or bust type situation.
I don't think it's the equivalent of a no trade clause. I think what we just saw from Bradley Beal shows exactly how extreme having a no trade clause is. Like, the equivalent of a no trade clause means Bradley Beal can actually go wherever the heck he wants to go. If he didn't have the no trade, like, he has the more daunting contract than Dame. It's longer, and he's not the level of player that Dame is. He's never been like a first team all NBA guy. If he didn't have the no trade clause, there is a 0% chance Bradley Beal would be in Phoenix right now. Phoenix had zero picks to trade. They had zero enticing young guys to give up, right? Like, this happened because Beal said, I want to be in Phoenix. And the Wizards said, okay, well, if we're going to trade him, I guess we got to do it in Phoenix. And that's the only way to do it. So I don't think it's quite that extreme. But I do imagine that even independent of Dame's contract and independent of how the league looks at Dame's contract, I'm very confident that if the Blazers got to a point where they were going to actually trade him, they would work with him on sending him to a place that he wanted to be. This entire process, the whole time, has been just in respect of Dame's desires. I don't think that'll change just because they agree that it's best for those two sides, you know, not to continue their business partnership or however they're going to decide to phrase it when it actually happens. I don't see them just like banishing him to some place that he has absolutely no interest in going, like on the Portland side. So I imagine Miami will be a team. I imagine there will be other teams that will be interested because he's still really, 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 really freaking good. And if he had played 60 some odd games last year, like, he would have been my first or second team all NBA probably. So he is still awesome. There will be teams that want him. And if he leaves Portland, I imagine he'll want to go to a place where he can like really seriously win at a high level. Obviously Miami would be one of those places, but I my guess is there'll be one or two more that we hear about.
Sam, yes, what's sir. The threshold for him deciding you've done enough, Blazers? Like, you've done enough in this first 5 days of free agency. I would assume it's probably a Jeremy Grant re-signing, but it sounds like more, right?
I mean, oh yeah, it's not, that's not enough. And I actually think, because we do have a lot of ground to cover, I'll answer this question while segueing to our next spot that we're going to dive into. But I think Jeremy Grant re-signing is key, is big time, has got to happen. And then, like, the dream scenario that I wrote about, that's definitely, I don't think, happening, but it is kind of illuminative. Is that a word? Illuminates where his head is at, is Draymond Green coming to Portland. And they don't have cap room. They would have to find out, sign and trade, maybe involve a third team. But it shows you, like, if that did happen, where you've got a guy of Draymond stature with Jeremy Grant, then I think Dame would say, let's go. It's not, you know, too much focus has probably been on the phrasing of title contender. This is just me talking, but I get the sense that it's like when Joe Cronin put out his statement yesterday that they met, he said, we are committed to building a winner around Damian. And I think that remains good enough. Now, you can criticize that if you want. I just think it means like a good team that's in the mix, that has a crack at it, and that can keep trying to make moves around the edges.
The teams he used to be on, like, four years ago, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I just don't know why there's a belief that that's sitting out there for them. You know, they've tried to do the same thing the last few years and been like, what, like the 12, 13 seed?
Well, and to, you know, to that point, you know, I do think they had potentially had a crack at doing the number three pick for Zion Williamson with New Orleans. And by all accounts, like, they shut that down real quick. Like, they just, the risk was too high. We love you, Dame. And I don't even know if Dame was pushing for that or not. But that does also show you where their heads are at, that there's a threshold for them of what type of risk they're willing to take. And so it's a little bit Slater, and maybe we should throw it to the team you cover in some capacity, but it's a little bit like, hey, guess what? You know, you know anything about dual timelines? And as Jerry Brewer of the Washington Post wrote last week, dueling timelines, you know, like, that's partly what
Blazers, you know, what's interesting about the difference in the situations, the Warriors, you know, front office in a lot of ways underestimated their core when they decided, hey, we're drafting James Wiseman, we're drafting Kuminga, we're drafting Moody. Their thought at the time was, the core is kind of aging. I'm not sure a title is still sitting out there for them. And then Steph Curry proved to them, like, no, I can still go win a title. I will literally drag these lottery picks, really not doing much in the playoffs, and win you a title while you are trying this second timeline. Where it's the complete opposite with Portland, where they're acting like, hey, we're on this two-timeline plan. We're going to win and develop. Or, you know, it's like, well, you ain't winning. And, like, you have a path to better development, you know, a better rebuild, and you're kind of doing none at the same time. Like, both are kind of, like, in some ways, like, the Warriors' plan failed, particularly the developmental side failed. But it's just, I don't know, it's just, I just think it's odd team building for Portland. The best argument, I think, for the Blazers to keep Lillard would be, like, as a mentor to Scoot Henderson. Because, sure, in my opinion, their entire future right now should be Scoot Henderson focused. And if that's, hey, we want Damian Lillard to, like, teach him how to be the star in Portland, like, that makes sense.
I mean, for what it's worth, I think he's big on Scoot. I think he's excited about these picks. You know, it just comes with a butt, with a capital B, and probably a caps lock all the way across the board. He just wants more. Fred?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, it feels like they're like, I mean, you're talking about the two timelines and straddling the two timelines. I find that most of the time, when organizations try to straddle a line like that, they end up spreading their legs so far that they just strain their groin. Like, it happens. We saw that with the
it's
Wizards.
Like an old Bugs Bunny cartoon, you know.
Yep, yeah. Exactly. Like, they're we've said on this podcast like six times, like, the parallels between them and the Wizards, between Beal and Dame, and between the way that the teams are trying to pick this guy and win around this guy and be loyal to this guy, and it's mutual loyalty, and it doesn't really work. If you don't get really, really lucky, like if Scoot Henderson doesn't just show up and is like a star right off the bat, not develops into one, but is a star right off the bat. If you don't get really, really lucky in that sense, it's really hard to go with the, well, we're going to develop guys, but we're also going to try to win. Normally, you kind of got to pick a direction. And if you have two directions, do you have any? I mean, that's kind of the question the Blazers need to ask and find an answer to.
Lastly, guys, before we move on, and this again, maybe this will be our delayed segue. Should Jeremy Grant want to resign? And money aside, and that's a hell of an aside.
I was going to say, Jeremy Grant might just go high as bitter.
That is one hell of an aside.
I know, but okay, let's. We know at some point we're going to talk about Sacramento. So unless you guys object,
he shouldn't give a hometown discount. I'll say that you would.
But he's been the type of guy we've been talking about for a long time that the Kings should go after, and all of a sudden here they are with $35-ish million in cap space after sending Rashawn Holmes away. Why am I blanking on where Rashawn went?
To the Mavs. Sold their 24th pick to get off his contract.
Right. Yeah, and we know that likely helps them land a Domantas Sabonis, renegotiate and extend. That'll cut into the cap room. We'll see what kind of space there is left. Harrison Barnes' future is in question as well. But I thought about Jeremy this morning in the context of the Kings, because it is a bit of a mystery exactly what their plan is, you know, how wide their net is going to be, so to speak. You know, but for Jeremy's purposes, you know, like, where should his head be at? Because he's actually a fairly coveted free agent, I think, in this market.
I do think his price tag matters, right? I mean, he showed that. Remember when he was in Denver on a winner? I mean, it's like crazy to think about now, but he was like Aaron Gordon before Aaron Gordon on that Denver core. And everyone thought he, you know, was going to stay to continue to win and to play with Jokic, and he shocked a lot of people by taking bigger money to go to Detroit, which, by the way, I mean, according to our James Edwards, sounds like we might get a, you know, deja vu. He might take big money to go to Detroit again, it sounds like, or at least that's a possibility. So I just think it's whoever, like, prioritizes him. And I remember part of that Detroit move for him was he thought he could do more, you know, be more as a scorer than he was. I assume he still thinks that. So I think
the Nuggets offered him the same deal in Denver that he took in Detroit, which spoke volumes, obviously.
I do think he's in a different place, like personality wise, than he was when he took that Detroit deal. By the way, totally on the table, he takes the Detroit deal. But I do think that Nuggets role that he was in, it wasn't quite Aaron Gordon, because it was a lesser role than Aaron Gordon plays, right? Like, they use Aaron Gordon so much as a passer and all of that. And defensively, it's similar to Gordon. But offensively, he was mostly kind of a standstill shooter who's mostly in the corner. And he was awesome at that for Denver. He really excelled. And he wanted to show he could do more. And I think in Detroit, with him as like a lead option, I mean, he could do more. But that's not the type of player he was. I thought in Portland, it really showed what an excellent role he can be in. It was like a perfect mix between he did too little in Denver, and he did a little too much in Detroit. And I'm not 100% convinced that he would go to Detroit and not have to do a little bit too much again. I think the basketball situation is going to matter to a degree, because he's not old. Like, this might be his biggest contract he ever gets, but it might not be his last big contract. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he should go for the money. I agree. I think the Kings would be a great fit for him. I think going back to Portland would be a good fit for him if he wanted it. He had an incredible year last year. Like, he was averaging 20 on 40% three-point shooting. He's a good, switchable, versatile defender. Like, he fits in a million different places. And he plays team basketball. He's a good player. But I think him going to a place where he has to do a little bit too much and has, like, you know, becomes kind of a modicum of inefficiency like he was at times in Detroit, I don't think that's really who he is. And I think it could actually hurt him in the long term. Although, yes, the Detroit thing is definitely real. I agree. He'd be good for the Kings. He'd be good for them.
All right, gentlemen. Fred, we all know that when the Slater Nation is on here, you know, that the Dubs fans are just dying to hear what he says about their favorite team. So let's go.
Call me Slater Nation.
I did. Forget the Dub Nation. Slater Nation. We are going to pivot to the four-time champion, not defending champion, Golden State Warriors. almost got knocked off by those Kings, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Draymond Green, speaking of, you know, Fred, you said that Jeremy Grant, you know, this might be his last big payday. You could make the same argument for Draymond to an even stronger degree.
Do we consider his eventual TNT, like TV payday?
Oh, that's coming. He's getting that Barkley money at some point.
He's got paydays deep into his like 60s probably.
When he sells his pod for $500 million. Well,
you know, by the way, this week, the same day that his opt-out deadline is, which is the 29th, it's Thursday, he will be broadcasting from Las Vegas. They're calling it the match. It's Klay Thompson and Steph Curry golfing against Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce at the Wynn golf course. And Draymond Green will be on the call the same day as his opt-out deadline.
Wow. Look at
so
the Draymond
Green. So
big money
will remains in his future.
PR wing over here, Slater Nation. As a quick aside, because I was needing to find a home for this, this fun little story, and I'll give it 25 seconds of airtime. It just feels natural. We bring up Draymond. We all know about the infamous Jordan Poole punch. For anybody on the old YouTube channel who might have noticed the shiner on my left eye, my son might have given me a good old black eye. Don't fight with your 16-year-old. Don't wrestle on the couch and push his leg above his head and then lose grip of the leg and have his heel come down like he's, you know, Conor McGregor coming after
like
you.
Like he's Draymond Green.
Yes, yes, indeed. So if anybody wondered why I'm looking more homely than normal, that is the case. Draymond, though, is you know, now almost a year removed from that ill-fated incident, and the Warriors appear to be all in on keeping him aboard, all in to some degree. I think they're haggling over money. But Slater, it does seem like Draymond back in a Warriors jersey is very likely. I don't think this Portland thing is happening. I don't think Detroit's happening. I guess never say never because we haven't even technically started the free agency period yet. But how do you see his situation?
Yeah, again, I think a lot of times, you know how we always get hints with the moves that are allowed to be done before free agency? Oftentimes give you a hint on where, you know, things might be going, like opt-ins, opt-outs, you know, teams making maneuvers. For example, the Kings, right, on draft night making that trade to clear cap space would signal they have an idea that they need extra space for this or that. I think the Chris Paul trade, Jordan Poole for Chris Paul trade, was a blinking light signal that Draymond Green and the Warriors are going to come to an agreement. Because you make it, that is a massive win now move that kind of rids it, it not only gets the chemistry issues out of the locker room, right? I mean, we all understand the Jordan Poole, Draymond Green dynamic.
A hell of a statement, though? Just briefly, I think it's amazing that the upgrade in chemistry issues is inserting Chris Paul into the Warriors locker room.
Hey, Sam, I'll tell you something. Every team eventually ends up trading Chris Paul, it seems. But no team that has ever traded for Chris Paul has ever regretted trading for Chris Paul. Every single team that's done it has always been very happy by the end result.
Sure.
So sure. Yes.
No, it's going to happen again.
I mean, I could see it, but the other day, just again, I'm getting far afield, but I'm looking at the history of the Warriors core and Chris Paul for a little item I wrote in my notebook. And I'm literally Googling, you know, Steph Curry, Chris Paul, going through the history, make sure I don't miss anything. Okay, you got the thing in March where Steph said it's not 2014 no more. That's fine. We all knew about that one. The one that I either forgot or never even saw was Draymond on All the Smoke. This is 3 years ago, back in 2020. Just blatantly talking about how I don't like Chris Paul. I didn't like the way that he was treating Steph, and I would go out of my way to create division between them. You know, like there was a lot there, and I know it's 3 years ago, and I know they're all grown ups. And
oh, this dates back so far. Andrew Bogut chimed in on Twitter because it's like Andrew Bogut was the original, like, you know, kind of Chris Paul hater in the locker room. The hey, right. Steph, you need to, like, I know he used to be your mentor, but now you need to go kill him. I mean, this goes back to those Clippers Warriors series, but to the original point, like, you don't make that move. You're getting a 38, going to turn 39 during the playoffs next year guard by trading your 24-year-old on the rise. I mean, say what you want. I know Poole had a bad playoffs, but he's on the rise, you would say. That is a next year matters more than, you know, the years beyond. And that means you can't then let Draymond Green walk. And right. Another part of it was you're clearing the salary issues that you were having by getting Paul's much more maneuverable contract in, which is non-guaranteed next year, partly because you're probably about to commit some money beyond this season to somebody else, and that would be Draymond Green.
Right, right. All right, so that's how we see that one going. Fred, what did your list look like? Although before, you know, you go, you give me so much crap over the years now of not preparing enough for the pod. I got a source telling me that you don't have a list of 97 different free agency situations that you want to analyze. What the hell, man? What's going on?
No, I only have 92.
All right, fair enough. Where are you going?
Yeah. No, I don't. I pulled an Amick.
Wow.
You know?
No, you pulled the Cats. This is a Cats.
I want to talk about the Clippers. They are fascinating because they actually have two first-round picks that they can trade now. And they have a lot of expiring contracts, and they need a point guard. And it just feels like they are on the brink of something. You hear the Paul George noise. I'm not convinced that they're going to trade Paul George because I don't Agreed. See them. I don't see them making – normally when you trade a 33-year-old star player who's still really, really good, as Paul George is, the return is young players and or draft picks. And I don't think that's what the Clippers would want if they were to trade Paul George. If they were to trade him, I think it would be sort of a reshuffling of the core around Kawhi Leonard with the goal remaining the same, to win a title. I don't see a trade in which they get that for Paul George that's really obvious, unless it's some sort of like three-team deal where a bunch of young stuff and picks go to Portland and they get Dame, who I think would make a lot of sense for them. And like you send Paul George elsewhere. You know, that's like an interesting shuffling, but it's specific and obviously ridiculously unlikely. I think what's more likely with the Clippers is they're going to try to have to find ways to get creative around those two guys. They've got Batum's expiring. They've got Covington's expiring. They've got, Marcus Morris is expiring. They've already tried to get Malcolm Brogdon, seen his medicals, and said, actually, no way. So we've seen kind of
they really sniffed around on Chris Paul, too, and obviously the hope would have been a wave and a minimum type signing. But
mm-hmm. And are
we sure
they're going to try to upgrade? And are we sure they got a little bit to do?
Are we sure Russell Westbrook won't just be back as their point guard next season?
No, he could be. That's definitely on the table. But even if he is, like, I imagine them trying to put together those expirings and a couple of picks to try to do something. I would not be shocked. This is the season for expirings. Hey, look at what just happened. I mean, we haven't discussed the John Collins trade. Like, look at the John Collins trade. But the way that this CBA is coming in on July 1st, most teams, if not every team, is horrified of what could happen. Not every team, because I guess Phoenix is definitely not. But most teams are horrified of what happens if you get too far over the apron and it restricts basically everything you can do. You can't make trades where you take in more money. You can't sign buyout guys. You have the frozen pick 7 years out. You can't use the taxpayer mid-level exception. You can't use trade exceptions. Like, you can only just sign guys to minimum contracts if they're not buyout guys, and that's it. And these teams are horrified of these restrictions. And the Clippers could be one of those teams where, like, screw it, we're just going to build up our salaries. But because of that, you get trades like John Collins, where like the Hawks are horrified of being in the tax now. So they're like, dump John Collins for a $6.4 million expiring.
I think what you said is important there, though. It seems to me a major reason the Hawks are horrified of that is because they literally financially, like monetarily, don't want to pay it. Where like we know Ballmer don't care, like from a like actual like dollar spent standpoint. We're just going to find out soon if his front office believes it's just too restrictive from a team building standpoint to go that deep into the tax.
For sure, which is why I'm really truly wondering what they end up doing with their expiring contracts. Because when you have a bunch of expiring contracts that are this is like, I remember when I was like in high school and Bill Simmons popularized Theo Ratliff's expiring contract. And I feel like that was the first famous expiring contract amongst NBA nerds. And like, I feel like this is the first time expirings are back since then. You got Marcus Morris on 17. You got Batum on almost 12. You got Covington on almost 12. Like, you can piece, you got Eric Gordon, by the way, on 20, who they could just not guarantee if they wanted to. But like, that's a lot of money that comes off the books at the end of this year that teams might want if they're trying to rid long-term money to dip under the tax moving forward when it becomes really punitive in 24-25.
Yeah, that was what the Chris Paul move was about for the Warriors, partly. You know, he's expiring in some ways. Sam, any Clippers thoughts or do you want to pivot to
I agree with on the bigger stuff what Fred said about Paul George. It does seem evident that they, you know, had a few conversations about him, but that they are back to leaning into that duo. You know, it's not ideal in terms of them going into their new arena, I believe, a year from now. You know, they're trying to get momentum here, and it's just these last couple of years, it seems like a long time ago now when you had kind of the infamous marketing approach and angle of streetlights over spotlights, which was like this passive aggressive shot at the Lakers. And, you know, they were coming for that LA title and they haven't gotten that title. They haven't gotten the actual title, you know, and if anything, in a weird way, not that the league would ever admit it, they might be happy that like the league's richest owner who has just, you know, money in spades over the rest of the field of owners has not been able to just go out and buy a championship. And so they are in a tricky spot. They obviously had front office changes this offseason with Michael Winger going to Washington and elevating the pretty deep roster of front office crew that they had in there internally. So we'll see what they do, but they are one of those squads that is good but not great and having a hard time getting over the hump.
Patrick Beverley's available. They could redux streetlights over spotlights. He's a free agent.
Indeed. They still got Lee Jenkins. That's the important part.
It's break time, Sam, according to our producer.
All right, let's take a quick break. Gentlemen, before we take the break, this is the crowdsourced, you know, podcast host sourced part of the program. Where are we going on the other side of the break, gentlemen?
I got one. Let's go to Houston, the team I believe that has the most cap space, if I'm correct. I only have like that's 61 perfect. Million, something like
I like that because I wanted to get into a certain bearded superstar. We will do that on the other side of the break. Be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, gentlemen, let's go to the middle of the country where the Rockets have so much cap space. Quick context before I'll throw it to Slater to give his thoughts here. Rafael Stone, the GM of the Rockets, is now, you know, I think roughly 3 years into his tenure, took over amid all that chaos when James Harden was pushing his way out, finding his way to Brooklyn, finding his way to Philadelphia. Eventually, the rebuild starts from there, you know, two pretty god-awful years that, you know, you got a Rockets fan base that got used to contending and had a pretty fun run, even though it didn't, you know, actually result in a title. Tillman Fertitta, their owner, I think it's well known at this point that, you know, he's kind of seen the other side of the NBA where the spotlights haven't been as bright. The attention has not been there. I'm sure the revenue streams have dipped a bit. And he wants to be relevant again, you know, and they've got some decent young players. Now have Ime Udoka coaching their squad. You know, very respected coach who did good stuff with Boston. Kind of controversy notwithstanding, and now just gobs of money to throw around. James Harden, Fred VanVleet, what are we doing here, guys? What do you think, Slater?
Well, I mean, number one, like I believe, and Andrew could give me the exact protections, but their first rounder's going to the Thunder next year. I think maybe what, top four protected?
Top four, yeah.
Yeah, Andrew says top four protected. They don't want to lose, like, right? And I mean, it's almost an edict from management. This isn't like year whatever of a patient rebuild. It seems like they're really trying to crank it forward.
Right.
And that means spending a lot of the money that they have available to them. Obviously, it seems, and Sam, correct me if I'm wrong, but Harden does seem to be like option A, you know, the guy they want the most. But they clearly need to have, you know, I guess pivot points, and you mentioned VanVleet. That seems definitely like when they're interested.
I don't know Brooke if they're, Lopez. And I don't just to clarify what you kind of alluded to there. I don't know if they're completely all in on James, and that's what we're about to find out. They're definitely in on James. I think it might be at the right price. If you give, you know, him the whole bag, then you really shut some doors that might have taken you to a more promising place when it comes to the way you disperse that money. And that's where James is, you know, we don't need to go down the James road too far, but like that's where his situation is tricky because for one, personally, just being honest, I can't wait to see where he goes because from a reporting standpoint, this has been one of the more interesting, unique stories that I've ever covered from the standpoint that like there's all this noise about how James, that even beyond basketball, even beyond his love of Houston as an area, the businesses he has out there, you know, his, you know, the fact that his jersey's probably up in all the rafters of the strip clubs, all the stuff we have fun with in that city, there is also noise that there's just regular life stuff that is pulling him back to Houston, that he needs to be back there and would like to be back there. And so a couple months ago, you felt like it was kind of fait accompli that it was going to happen. And now some of the chatter is swinging back towards Philly, and it feels like a more traditional leverage game of, you know, okay, who's going to give me the biggest bag?
And the coaching change seemed to really matter with the Sixers, we can say that.
Yeah, and it's funny. He's pushed back on that a little bit. I definitely think it's true. If Doc Rivers was still there, I think this thing would be a wrap. Seems like the Nick Nurse hire has landed. And I don't think this part matters that much, but you still have this Rockets thread within the Philly organization. And it does not, everybody knows about Daryl Morey, you know, kind of his blood brother at this point, who he's been with for so long, running the Sixers front office. But Tad Brown is, you know, the CEO. Now with Nick Nurse, you know, spent 2 years as the head coach of the Rockets G League team. Doesn't mean he coached James Harden. He didn't. But like that ethos and the kind of that thread is still there. To me, it is fascinating. I don't know which way it's going to go.
They need an adult in the room.
Rockets do?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, look, maybe they'll play differently like under Ime Udoka. There.
You know what time it is.
Does Dylan Brooks work as an adult in the room?
Wow. That's amazing.
It depends on how you define.
He's certainly an option.
Yeah.
He's literally an adult, I guess. not exactly what I was going for. The way that they played the last couple of years, and maybe this change or adjusts or gets a little better under Ime Udoka, who obviously did a good job on the court with the Celtics during his one season leading them. But they were the most turnover-prone team in the league. They had no semblance of an offense. They were just the least disciplined team. They were. I mean, I I was having a conversation with somebody in the league, and we were just, you know, chatting about the Rockets, and I just never forget this line because it's such a funny way to describe it. He says they're the highest level AAU team I've ever seen. And that was kind of how they played basketball, and they need an adult in the room. Fred VanVleet would be an adult in the room. That would make sense. Somebody to actually organize things and have a pedigree and have some discipline. Brook Lopez would be an adult in the room. Although, like, you know, we'll see what that would do with like Sengun, who I think is extremely talented. But they need some adults in the room. Even if they were rebuilding completely and didn't care about winning this year, which they do care about winning, but even if they didn't, I would still say they need some adults in the room. Like, they need someone to bring some semblance of competence, because someone like Jalen Green, for example, is not going to develop in the way that you want him to if he's just kind of running around like a chicken with his head cut off on both sides of the floor. They need more of that sort of competence. And so if they just get some competent guys, I'm like, okay, at least they got that.
Fred, they should, whoever that guy is, they should introduce him as such before games. I think this should be a new thing, like an honest assessment of each guy's role. And now, playing small forward, the adult in the room, you know, and now the immature but talented, so it's, you know what I mean? Like, let's get some honesty and transparency here.
Beyond
they had no semblance of togetherness at all this past season. Like, at all. Like, they have had the most disastrous turnovers in the league of any team 2 years running. Just like inexcusable, terrible turnovers, and all of that kind of stuff. Terrible defensive rotations and just no semblance of togetherness. Like, that honestly is the number one thing with Houston that needs to change. Their young guys are talented.
They just, beyond that, like, they seem like a team that can kind of just shake up the market with just big offers that you might not have seen coming. I mean, we mentioned VanVleet, but, you know, could they steal Brook Lopez from Milwaukee? Well, that doesn't make Houston any type of contender, but that really hurts one of the best teams in the East, you know, something like that. And, you know, there are other names, you know, Middleton would be another name, but I just think they have a chance to just, like, they're probably the day one team I expect to be like, whoa, they gave that guy that much money?
Well, and we keep trying to find pivot points here, but that feels like a good time to bring up a young man by the name of Kyle Kuzma. Because we're spotlighting a lot of teams. I would love to get your guys' thoughts on a particular free agent who I think is, like, he might be that guy where you're going to say, wow, they gave him such and such. Or maybe the hype is not real, and maybe Kyle is kind of headed toward the kind of payday that he did not expect. To me, the idea that Kyle is looking for $30 million a year is wild. Again, you know, this league does stuff like that, so we'll see what happens. But he's been tied to the Kings. He, you know, he conceivably loses a possible landing spot in Utah with the John Collins trade going that direction. You know, and that's where you have this free agency game of musical chairs that goes on this time of year. You know, any strong thoughts on Kuzma's free agency and what might happen there?
Here's the thing with Kuzma. Most of the teams with cap space, save for a few, like the Kings are a good one, but most of the teams with cap space are teams that probably are not going to make a massive offer for Kyle Kuzma because they're losing teams. Like the Spurs are not going to make some huge offer to Kyle Kuzma. And so if he really wants to get paid, there's a chance that he would have to get paid with a sign-in trade, which normally would be fine. But sign-in trades for him are not so easy, because then base year compensation comes into play, which basically says if you get a 20% raise on your previous year's salary and you do a sign-in trade, then your outgoing number in the trade, your outgoing salary, is different from your incoming salary. And it makes it really difficult to match salaries on a trade. You basically need to find a third team. It makes it really complicated. And one team might just bow out because of the complications, or because it all of a sudden becomes a bad deal. So I wouldn't be surprised if Kuzma ended up getting less than we thought, or it took a little while, like he lingered, because he is going to get more than a 20% raise on the $13 million he made this year. I wouldn't be shocked by that. I also wouldn't be shocked if the Kings just use their space on him because he's been linked to the Kings forever. Like the Kings were trying to trade with him.
Trade for him, right? That trade was essentially done to Sacramento, and then the Russell Westbrook pivot by the Lakers canceled it. But this is, and that was the current Kings front office who clearly liked him.
Yeah, 100%. No, that was real. It's just a matter of
I kind of like the fit in Sacramento with him.
What number, though? What number makes you finally
It is a good question. Talking about them having like, you know, 34, 35. I like the fit in like the mid-20s, 20 to mid-20s, if they can get him for that, because I do think they should use a chunk to secure Sabonis long-term. And I do think, you know, are they going to go get this, and I'm talking about the Kings, Sasha Vezenkov from Greece. You know, what number does it take to potentially bring him over? I think they want to retain Trey Lyles. It's part of why I don't see them as really a legitimate Draymond Green, you know, target, because I just think they have a lot of stuff at play. It's not just, we got this cap space to give to one guy.
You
don't
think that's part of the Domas extension talks is, you know, we can bring the guy that stomped on you.
Is that really that big a deal?
No. I mean, he wasn't happy about it. I'm not saying it would keep him from wanting the guy.
I think ideally, so they have $35 million in room, right? Up to 35 in room. Is that right?
Yeah,
if they renounce Barnes and all that?
A bunch of guys.
So like ideally, if you're operating with 35 in room, you would kind of want to get him on like a 23 starting salary, because then that leaves the leftover, which is basically as much as the mid-level exception. So now you can compete with all these other teams who have the mid-level, and you're going to have the room mid-level, which is smaller. Now you can compete with all these other teams for the mid-level and basically give out a mid-level type contract to somebody else, or maybe two other guys, and then you use the room exception to bring in another player, and that's kind of how you add. So I would say, I think they have 35. I would cap my Kuzma offer on like whatever leaves me with that mid-level number left, so I can then compete. Maybe even a little bit more, so I can then outbid those mid-level guys and maybe land somebody else.
Well, I'll say this much about Kuzma. I'm fairly confident that his camp will not be using John Hollinger's list of the top NBA free agent forwards as marketing material, since our colleague and friend John Hollinger, the esteemed, has Kyle as the eighth best forward on the market, heading toward a salary of $13,591,000, which I think, you know, I think it'll probably land above that. But it does kind of speak to a little bit, I think, of the mixed kind of room on Kuz. And I do think it's a good fit with the Kings. Just a matter of if they go that route, not going too high.
Sam, I do have a question, a Kings question.
Yep.
Since we're circling back to them. Is there any Bruce Brown noise with the Kings? I just feel like he would fit so well for them.
100%. I mean, just full disclosure, no, but also it's on my list to ask about and just get a sense about. It does make a ton of sense. But the defensive shortcomings that they've had.
For sure.
And then him, really, he fits perfectly because they are so, with good reason, leaning into their elite offense that their concerns with any possible addition. I mean, they, you know, just to bring up a polar opposite example, like, hey, your defenses need some kind of shoring up, go after Dylan Brooks. Well, no, because now you're cutting into the offense.
Well, by the way, that's one of the Draymond Green problems. You pair him with Sabonis, and it's.
But at least he's bringing you playmaking, and he is, you know, he has aspects.
Think DB Dylan Brooks can playmake a little bit?
I mean, Draymond's a hub. Yeah, I mean, that would be a challenge for Mike Brown to have two hubs with Sabonis and Draymond, but at least he's giving you a unique skill on the offensive side. Bruce Brown, to your point, Fred, I think he'd be a wonderful fit. Now, I'm dying to see, he's a good guy to highlight real quick, and I know we're just kind of scattershotting here, but like in the wake of the Nuggets championship, I mean, it makes absolutely no financial, economic, logical sense for him to stay in Denver, the way the numbers bear out there. But emotions are emotions, and so things were said, you know, I mean, even in the parade, I think Bruce said something about, should we run it back, you know, and he kind of teased the crowd a little bit. I'd be shocked if he is actually back. We talk about guys who, like, you only get so many paydays, you know. Bruce could be headed towards a pretty good one, and yeah, I think the Kings would be a good fit.
You guys want to, like, rattle off quickly a few other names that
I mean, can I mention the team I cover? I think they're quite interesting this offseason.
Of course.
Yeah.
Can I ask you actually something about your team that you cover?
Please do.
It seems like there's Dante DiVincenzo buzz, and I do expect Dante DiVincenzo to decline his player option for the Warriors, and the Warriors cannot go over, I think it's, whatever, like $6-7 million to sign him. Do you see that? Is this Villanova connection that the Knicks are, is that their big target?
I think it's on the table. I think there's noise there for sure. I do think the interesting thing with the Knicks is that, like, I would be, Josh Hart has his player option deadline coming up on Thursday. There's a world where he picks it up and then a month later in August signs an extension with the Knicks. There's a world where he declines it. But in that world where he declines it, I would just be absolutely floored if he didn't return to the Knicks. Like, that dude's coming back. And I don't even think he's going to talk to other teams, to be honest. Like, he wants to come back. The Knicks desperately want him back. Like, that's happening, I think. And if that happens, then the Knicks are bringing back their entire rotation. So they have to make some kind of move. If they're going to, like, use the mid-level, they have to make some kind of move in order to open up a rotation spot. I think it could be Obi Toppin. It could be Emmanuel Quickley. It could be a bigger trade for a star, because obviously that's what they've been waiting on. But I think some kind of move is on the table. They want more shooting. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, look, he's CAA, and they obviously target all the CAA guys. So, their president, Leon Rose, formerly ran the basketball department at CAA, and they target all the CAA guys, and Donovan Mitchell was CAA and all that. But, man, I just, if they go get Towns, it's not going to be cheap. From everything that I hear around the league with Towns, it's like Minnesota used to say, we're not trading Towns, we're not trading Anthony Edwards, we're not trading Rudy Gobert. And from everything I hear around the league, like, Anthony Edwards is kind of being held. Other teams are interpreting it as, like, Anthony Edwards is now being held on the higher pedestal, which is, like, it's the way it should be. But it's not like they're, like, trying to give away Towns. Like, if they were going to trade Towns, I think they would command a ton of stuff back. And if you're going to give up a ton of stuff for Karl Anthony Towns, like, all it's going to happen if I'm the Knicks is I'm just going to have nightmares about playoff teams just destroying them with pick and rolls with Brunson and Towns over and over and over again. Like, I don't see the fit for them with Towns. Like, I think Paul George, another CAA guy, would be a way better basketball fit. You bring in a wing who can shoot, move off the ball beautifully, be a great secondary ball handler. He's a perfect type of defender for a Tibbs defense, guards the weak side unbelievably. Like, I think that's a guy, even though he's got the health problems and he's 33, like, I think that's the guy. I think, but they've been patient waiting out the star. Like, I'm not 100% convinced they're going to do it this summer. I do think they know they need shooting though, and they're going to try to find some kind of way to open that up. I didn't mention RJ Barrett too. I think he starts his extension this upcoming season. I think he would be on the table as somebody who could be on another team at the start of next year as well.
Sam, do you want me to just rattle off a couple names? Grant Williams, that's is he back in Boston? Seems like
doesn't
maybe
seem
not.
Like yeah. I think
you
the
are
Porzingis
on mute,
thing.
Mr. Amy.
Oh, hold on. Apologies. We had background noise. I was trying to cut out. yeah, I mean, the Porzingis move out there seems to have created a domino effect that Grant may not be back. I don't know where he's headed, but you talk about a possibly fantastic, addition for somebody. I like Grant's game, and it seems like it's unofficially his end with Boston, but we'll see what happens there.
Austin Reeves is another name. I think we all are under the assumption he's going back to the Lakers, but what can somebody get his price way up for the Lakers and complicate their summer?
Someone should. I think someone will. Austin Reeves is good.
He's very
good. He gets memed because he's the white Laker and all of that. But, like, he's just really good now.
Yeah,
he's just a
really
good
player.
Everyone's
pretty much been introduced to that through the play. Like, he was just really good on the biggest stage, and that's the biggest thing. I mean, and the Spurs, not saying that they're necessarily the team that throws the big thing at Austin Rivers, but now that – or Austin Reeves. Austin Rivers also a free agent. But – Now that the Spurs have Wembanyama, just like how do they navigate all their cap space?
Also, so Reeves is restricted. I think teams will probably be more aggressive in trying to drive up the price of restricted free agents with the current CBA, because everyone hates an offer sheet. The team that has the free agent hates the offer sheet. The team offering the offer sheet hates the offer sheet. It holds up everything, holds up everybody. Everybody hates it. And you used to have 48 hours to match an offer sheet. And in the new CBA, it's 24. And if you're a team that just kind of has space and you just want to play your hand and be like, let's see if we can bring in this good young guy. Like, I think we might see some more offer sheets with that 24-hour window now. If I'm the Spurs, sure. Why not? What do you got to lose? It's not like you're going to miss out on some other big-time free agent. You have no space. Go for it. He's young. He's good.
Tying in again some of Mr. Hollinger's coverage of, because he's got a breakdown of every single position and his own views and power rankings, Austin ranked as the third best shooting guard in the bunch and featured along Mr. Bearded James Harden in the main picture. So yeah, he's gonna have a big time payday. And Lakers in general, I know we're getting near the tail end here, guys, but the D'Angelo Russell thing is gonna be fascinating. Certainly got vibes at the end of the Lakers playoff run that, you know, I mean, with how he struggled in that last series, that, yeah, I don't know. Like, I would love to have some truth serum with Mr. LeBron James and how he feels about, you know, D'Angelo being a big part of their program. And D'Angelo, if you go back to that Warriors series when he and I did a quick interview, certainly stuck in my head that I asked him about, like, how happy he was to find such a good fit, you know, post Minnesota and heading into free agency, that the timing seemed pretty good. And obviously this is before his late struggles. And he had said, like, yeah, they got a decision to make, don't they? And he had flipped it. Like, my point was like, well, no, aren't you happy that you are fitting with the Lakers? You know, and his thing was, nah, they have a decision to make. So he was kind of flexing a bit prematurely. And now, you know, I think it makes for a pretty interesting negotiation.
He is a name. Sure. There's a lot of names. We're going to recap it all next week, too. By the time, you know, it's crazy.
Chicago, too. I am waiting on Chicago. I have no idea what Chicago's going to do.
I think they just Vucevic it up and run it back, probably.
Oh.
You just turned that into a verb. I like that. All right, Jets. I'm gonna cap it there. That was great stuff. Like you said, we can go all day. There's million free agents, all kinds of situations. Going to be fun.
We'll break it down all next week. By the time Tuesday rolls around, like, free agency will probably be almost over pretty much.
I know, no doubt. Appreciate you guys. Good to have the crew back together again. And we will talk to you next week. Thanks, everybody.